Are you going to pause to see the Gold Cup?
No, we're not. Why are you interested in this?
Got money on it.
Oh yeah, how much?
No money. Just imaginary money. Pride money.
Bitcoin. Oh, laughing at your own jokes. Great way to start a podcast. Hello, welcome to episode 6 of YDK Podcast. Yeah. Just two people.
Back to the original.
I have Owen across from the table.
Hello.
Across from the table. Across the table? He's across the table. And I'm your host, Chris. Great duos. Laurel and Hardy. Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor in Stir Crazy, I guess. And then there's us.
Yeah.
Pretty much that's how it goes. I can't really think of anyone else that's anywhere near as funny as us. Okay, let's bang straight into a topic.
Get banging.
Recently, I've been thinking a lot about swearing. So, in the course of my duties as host of this podcast, I have numerous responsibilities, but in the course of my duties, I came across a video made by Google.
Oh.
Advising the user of a blog about how to work with explicit material, maybe how not to work with it. In the video, they outlawed explicit graphic material, of course. And in their own little way, it was a cartoonish thing that they'd obviously drawn themselves, but it was quite funny about how suggestive photos, even if it doesn't contain explicit material in the photo itself, even suggestive material, and then they had the little guy drawn, this little kind of, not stick figure, he was like a cartoony little square guy, like the Minions from Despicable Me, kind of drawn like that. And they had a couple of examples of how something would be suggestive. One was him looking with his eyes kind of glazed over with a banana in his right hand. This is very strange. Anyway, they moved on to the use of profanity. I listened to this because this was relevant to me.
Mm-hmm.
Being an explicit podcast, just to be safe, I said, let's be explicit when I decided.
Oh, no. We're missed on the kid demographic.
Anyway, but they said, reasonable use of profanity is fine. And then they concluded their section on profanity with the exact phrase, essentially, if you wouldn't use it in private company, it's not acceptable. Here's my problem with that. Surely in private company, you don't swear at all. So it could have just been a these two things they've said could be totally conflicting, and they didn't even think of that when they made the video. But essentially what it seemed to say was that there are certain words and phrases you can use in reasonable company.
Mm-hmm.
That are deemed profanity and are socially acceptable.
Indeed.
Now, first of all, this has obviously changed. In the past, no profanity is allowed to be used at all in formal company in reasonable social circumstances. However, recently in Ireland, very recently, a football pundit has come out on live television swearing.
Live television?
Swearing.
Twice.
I don't know. I didn't see it. I only heard about it.
I was watching it live.
Twice. And
shocked.
Apparently this is a big deal. People saying that it's maybe the most watched clip from the World Cup anywhere. I didn't see it, but I'm not quite sure what exactly he said. But, I mean, my issue was, why is this such a big deal? They turned the cameras on earlier than he was expecting. The other guy was on his phone.
It was badly produced.
It was it was poor production. Nothing, I mean, it's nothing like this podcast.
Below our standards.
Way below our standards. I don't understand why this is such a big deal. If anyone knows who the guy is, they know that's most likely what he's doing.
Eamon Dunphy.
That's most likely what he's doing there anyway.
I don't think it was a shock at all.
Yeah, and I also like that,
Didi was on his phone.
Dietmar Mann was on his phone. We don't know what he was doing. I wonder if he was texting somebody saying, Jesus, Eamon Dunphy is going off right now.
Give me a bit of gig.
A heat check. It was a heat check moment for Eamon Dunphy as he came back on. He said, maybe that's what he was planning. He's been swearing so much. He's getting into a role.
And you see Bill's face. He's like,
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
But why? Like, we know this is what he's like. I don't know why it's caused such a stir in the media.
The next day, I was eating breakfast. He was on the radio to apologise a second time.
I know. He should have just said, yep, that's who I am. Get over it.
I mean,
you know.
Even I saw Gary Lineker tweeted about this as well.
Mm-hmm. What did he say?
He just said, oh, look, what a surprise thing. Or like, oh no, Eamon Dunphy or something. Like, he's obviously just taking the piss as well.
Yeah.
But why, I guess, so many young people watch the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's the only excuse. But still, I mean, it was... Was it the late kickoff? No, it was probably like the 8 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah. Here's my problem. I like swearing. Not that I curse repeatedly or consistently. I try not to. And there is a point where you become aware that in our instance, we are being recorded, so we're well aware of the language we use, even though a certain member of this podcast is less judicious with his use of profanity when he's being recorded. However, I like swearing. I think it's wonderful how certain words we've ascribed this meaning to over the years, and they contain such a wonderful spectrum and nuance. I mean, you can use it in so many different circumstances. It can be release of tension. It can be as a...
Descriptive.
Yeah, exactly. Descriptive. Hyperbolic means.
Even an insult.
Who'd have thunk it? This brought me back, as a matter of fact, to something a long time ago, 4 years ago. The BP oil spill.
Oh.
In the Gulf of Mexico. And I remember that Barack Obama came out, and in one of his press conferences he said, and it seemed quite calculated, that he used the phrase, I want to know whose ass to kick. And this caused a great stir, a great controversy. He'd used the word ass. Now, relatively speaking, that's quite an innocuous word, honestly. Even though here in this country, we don't like the word ass. The ass is somewhat sacred to us. We prefer arse.
It's an animal.
No, but we prefer arse.
It is.
Because it sounds more masculine, and ass is a little bit sexualized.
Animal.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting because when we think of the Obama administration, especially at that time, they were, would you say, quite cerebral, and they didn't act with the necessary vigor force.
I guess
and
so.
It was quite obvious that this was quite a calculated thing. Whoever written this for him had deliberately dropped in that word,
the A bomb,
and it came across as quite uncharacteristic. My problem is, in terms of political use of swearing, it came across in that instance too obvious that somebody had planted this in, because it's not, Barack Obama wouldn't say this, for whatever reason.
You don't think?
And wasn't a study conducted that people who swear more are more likely to be honest? Maybe that's because they realise that without lying, their lives are worse, so they can swear more because it's annoying.
I did see that swearing increases pain tolerance.
Oh yeah?
So you could stick your hand in boiling water, and the people who survive for longer would be the ones who like are allowed to use profanity than those who are just allowed to say nothing, stay silent.
Okay, but there's a problem. You don't know about the individual in question. And I think if a politician came to the fore who was more likely to use profanity and had done in... I mean, there's a long history of, oh, I didn't know this microphone was on instances in the White House, such as the Eamon Dunphy incident we've been talking about, where it's quite obvious that during various administrations, swear words have been used, profanity has been used. So my thinking, and I have a lot of political thoughts today, unfortunately, is that you have to work with the individual in question. And the problem with that is it may come across differently for the person who receives it, who thinks, maybe to me it's not a big deal that he used ass, but to a more conservative person watching this, thinking back 4 years ago, you know, they wouldn't agree with that. He'd used it at all. So I think, in terms of swearing, it needs to be used sparingly. I think swearing should be allowed. Okay, there are certain words you do not use for whatever reason that we don't need to go into. But I think sprinkled into everyday conversation, swearing can be quite a wonderful thing. Okay, so what we're saying is it's a tool. In the case of the politician, he kind of used it as an attempt to rally the troops. Yeah, I mean, a business leader, a CEO or something could use it as a to show the requisite esprit de corps, you know, to try and motivate, as a motivation tool. But I think it needs to be careful who it's coming from.
Could you imagine Ender dropping the F-bomb?
No, that's true. But I don't know, maybe people would like him more if he sprinkled in a bit from there to there to show he had the requisite panache and vigour that was necessary to deal with this issue that faced him. Anyway, just swearing was topical at the moment, especially because...
Last night, Jeremy Paxman his last ever news night.
Uh-huh.
And some people complained.
He went in a blaze of glory, hopefully.
Don't think so.
Oh.
He did, though, use the speed of Christ a few times in a segment, and people complained about this.
Okay.
After all Paxman has done, you can probably allow him to say Christ on television. Past watershed.
I always think when people... I can't remember what I was thinking about. When like in sci-fi movies, people use the term Jesus Christ and they're like aliens.
Yeah.
Or it was the Batman movie, actually. That was it, in The Dark Knight. I think it's Gary Oldman's character says, Jesus Christ, to Aaron Eckhart at some point. But I just thought this is a strange juxtaposition. This is strangely placed in this film. Why are you suddenly using that as an expletive?
I don't know if you can use this. Did you watch the Graham Nunn show?
Not recently, no.
Samuel L. Jackson was on, and he was talking about how he edits... They have to obviously edit the script and like what's said for the airplane,
mm-hmm.
you know, edits, basically. So if you had the...
snakes on a plane?
Yeah.
Oh.
So instead of saying his famous line, he once said, I've had enough of these mother-cooking snakes on this mother-cooking plane.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually how they show it when you're, like, flying transatlantic.
Okay.
So it's obviously changed. And you get, like, these outrageous kind of words put in.
I just think spontaneity is a big form of comedy. So, I mean, when those actors are... I mean, you hear numerous times about unscripted things that happen and stay in the original cut, whether it be a TV show or film. And I think the part of the spontaneity is the well-placed Twitter word. Mm. Okay. Do you have anything else to talk about? What you got?
Yesterday, the golfer, Roy McIlroy,
declared
his allegiance, as it were, for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to feel for him, because obviously this is just a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
So he's decided he will go to the Olympics 2016, and he will be playing golf.
For Ireland.
Yep. Now, the South.
Yes, for the Republic.
Oh, yeah, the Republic, as opposed to Team GB.
Yeah. I like referring to Ireland as the Republic, because it kind of reminds me of Star Wars. I don't know. Anyway, are the Olympics a big deal in golf?
It'll be the first time since early 1900s they've been
Returned. Of course, yeah. I forgot about that. Now, nationality in this country is quite closely linked with religion, unfortunately.
Yes.
Now, we don't want to go into this. We've dabbled in politics today already. Maybe going down the religion route is for another day.
But just even identity, especially... Yeah. Up a few hundred miles away from where we're located at the moment.
Yeah.
I guess a few hundred miles on this
YDK headquarters.
Yeah. If you were to like go there as a tourist and just ask someone, what nationality are you?
Yeah.
You would get some very different answers back.
Yes.
And probably some expletives as well for asking that
Most
question.
Most likely. In my opinion, a stronger national identity is born from conflict. And I don't literally mean violence. I mean division.
Well, even so, nationalism really became a big deal in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
And obviously within 50 years, you've got these two huge conflicts in Europe.
Now, I look at it this way. We'll move on to the World Cup in a minute, but national anthems have become a bit of a deal, a big deal.
Mm.
And especially the moment where Neymar broke down in tears after the Brazil national anthem in their last game against Mexico. Now, I've heard from various sources, from various places, you know, they shouldn't be crying, you know, they should just be focusing their emotional intensity on the game, not the national anthem, and you know, they're not, maybe in a certain place, in certain areas of the world, dare I say, you know, you have to do this, you have to show the requisite patriotism. However, in terms of national identity, maybe in places where there has been no conflict over this for a while, it becomes more lax.
Mm.
Whereas in a conflict zone, like up of the north of this country, where the conflict still occurs, maybe not as violently, of course, as it did, but there is still obviously a stronger sense of identity because there is division there. Whereas down here, there isn't you wouldn't have people bellowing out the national anthem. Well, you'd have a select
few. Lots of people probably don't even know
the national anthem, exactly.
Words, yeah.
To be fair, it's in a different language, the one we use, so that's probably the reason.
Yeah. So I have a different view. I think, first of all, if you look at it from maybe an academic viewpoint, I'd say, what's the point of being a nationalist? I didn't choose to be Irish. Joe over there didn't choose to be English.
Yeah.
Why should I be proud of something I was involved in?
Well, and I that's what I mean. Myself, where there is a division, you can make the decision, so you stick to your decision.
At the same time, though, this might come across as a bit childish. When we beat England in Twickenham, I mean, that was huge. I couldn't help but feel this kind of childish glee. We're one up in the English or something.
Well, now this is interesting.
And it's almost like you feel almost a bit ashamed. Like, why am I so childish? But obviously, I wasn't born in Dublin, Ireland. But in some ways, I feel very Irish because I've had to defend almost accusations of not being Irish to, like, people growing up.
Yeah. You've demonstrated my point. Conflict breeds or fosters a greater sense of national identity in a person. Now, back to the
anthems.
The anthems. People who are saying that you need to focus your emotional intensity on the match. Okay, maybe because some anthems have the requisite vigour to them. But they should be marching tunes before going into battle, and I think bellowing them out.
The French one literally is.
Yeah, battle cry. I think that's good. Period, you know where thumping your chest, Kevin Garnett style, is actually supposed to increase testosterone levels and be good for you as a competitor. And when you're going into a pseudo-battle in terms of sport, it's a good thing to bellow out your national anthem. Okay, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't break down in tears, certainly not. I would use it as a way of motivating myself, and I wouldn't see it as a sort of a sad occasion. Maybe some people do on the verge of a football match, thinking of their country's past. They can break down in tears, but I think coming at it from such a cerebral level, where what is this national anthem? Who are we? And all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't choose to be Brazilian.
I don't think that's the right way to look at it. You are who you are. You are a product of your environment no matter what. So I think take pride in it, because if you take pride in yourself, part of yourself, this is strange that I'm coming across this way, part of yourself, part of who you are, is where you were born and where you were raised. So if you you may as well take pride in your country.
Especially where we're living now, all this kind of Celtic imagery.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit daft, personally. Because I'd say at the moment, our bloodstreams are so diluted.
Exactly.
We have no connection at all to the Celts, apart from this loose kind of mental connection in our minds.
Yeah, but that's it. It's not in our blood. It's who we choose to be. I wouldn't have talked about Harry Potter. It's like the Sorting Hat. It is our choices, Harry, or something that Dumbledore would say. But if it's in our mind, that's who we are. And the Rory McIlroy one is great because he could have chosen either way. So he may as well stick with it, and that is who he is. Okay, up there it's more complex because it is, you have to take religion into account.
It's interesting as well. Obviously, rugby is one sport in Ireland where
the whole country is unified. Yeah,
the whole island.
Excuse me. So I'll definitely edit that out. The whole island is unified.
So I wonder if you say Andrew Trimble, sign up for the anthems, and you see some lad beside you get really emotional during Avon Levine, how would you feel? Would you feel a bit like, okay, I'll allow him his moment, but at the same time, how come we don't have an anthem to be played?
Here's the thing. Well, they do, because they have Ireland's call.
Yeah, but that's a united.
Yeah.
Instead of...
Here's my issue with the rugby. I think the people who play rugby aren't as caught up in the crisis, or would be less likely to have a crisis of national identity.
Yeah.
And I think it is strange why there's no issue about this at all in rugby. There's absolutely no issue. There's a United Isle. Okay, so before we move on, so what are we saying here? I think that it's an issue that it doesn't come to the fore unless there is some sort of division. And I think at the same time, speaking of national anthems, okay, maybe if you're really sad national anthem, it's hard to get motivated. But I think you should use it as motivation, your national anthem. Maybe don't cry, but, you know, use it as a battle cry almost. Then, of course, I think national, it doesn't need to be at the forefront of your mind at all times.
It's interesting because...
national identity, but I think you do take pride.
Especially, you might be a bit like, oh, flipping, Ireland's pretty bad at this. You might have a very negative viewpoint. As soon as an American kind of makes a snide comment or like a joke about Irish people, you can kind of feel the blood boil.
Yeah, exactly. But that is it. Yeah. So in actual fact, if you do feel the blood boil, it means you do actually have, do have some national pride. You do have some sense of national identity.
As a song,
it takes conflict to bring it. Anything else there on this issue?
What do you make of, first of all, I saw Bosnia.
Yeah.
Obviously in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. It was a hugely proud moment for them to make the World Cup.
For the first time.
I think the country itself is only about 25 years old. Only Edin Dzeko, he's the only player who actually grew up in the country. Most are immigrants that live elsewhere. Begovic, obviously.
Emigrants.
Yeah, emigrants, sorry. Begovic obviously grew up in Canada and such. But you can see that's a hugely proud moment for them to play Argentina.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Hey, look, I don't want to... It's down to the individual, I think. But in my opinion, you are a product of your environment, and part of your environment is where you live, where you're brought up. So maybe it's harder to do on a broader level, but it's part of you. So take pride in it to some extent, even if it's just for selfish reasons, even if it's just to do with yourself.
What I don't like is... Oh, no, I won't bash like Americans.
No.
I was watching after the Ghana game.
Yeah.
One guy came out and said, "What are we celebrating? We beat a third world country. That's what America does."
Are you serious?
And I was like,
one of the players?
No, one of like this guy back in America, like this media, odd media guy. Like tabloid guy. I was like, oh my God, that's so...
Maybe then it also has to do with culture because, I mean...
He's like, we beat a country with no electricity, whatever. And I was sitting there like, oh my God.
That's a stupid thing to say because the country with less electricity is more likely to be out playing football.
Exactly. He said, we should be beating Brazil. Come on, we're going to beat Brazil in the final. And I was sitting there like, oh.
Yeah, it would be...
The same guy was saying...
It would be remiss of us to not mention America because maybe it does have more to do with culture. You know, it is more to do with where you're brought up because obviously their culture fosters a greater sense of this.
Kind of us
than really anywhere else in the world. Exactly. Yeah. But that's part of their zeitgeist. I don't know. Maybe that's part of their national consciousness. That
it's very much America, you know, land of the free.
Yeah,
it is very much best country in the world.
Hey, I'm not going to
bash that.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything because that's them. You take the good with the bad. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not indicting anything there, but that's part of who they are, and you know, it's what makes them great.
You'd never see an Irish guy saying, "Yep, number one, best ever."
Hey, it's to do with, you know. We could talk
maybe
about
edit this stuff out.
Look, we could talk about how you'd be a better whoever if you had more of the American mindset in terms of doing
even
X, Y, and
Z. There's this phenomenon where Germans actually felt a lot less pride of nationality, obviously, after the history that they went through, which I thought was kind of a sad thing that they felt like they weren't able to be proud of where they came from because of obviously the history that the country's had. It's quite sad.
Well. Yeah, that's a much more difficult issue, but to me that's kind of, you know, you didn't do it.
Exactly, yeah, so...
You know, it wasn't you. Okay, maybe it was your grandfather, but you
should English people feel bad about colonization? Or the Belgians and the French, they were involved in this.
People at the moment, they should make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
The Germans, sorry, they should make sure it doesn't happen again, but at the same time, a lot of that was kind of a momentum thing. That just built up. I'm not saying nobody knew about it. I'm not trying to say that. And I'm not that well educated in this, honestly, to make it to really for anyone to listen to me at all. But it kind of grew and grew, and then you don't get caught up. It's like putting a frog into boiling water. You know, if you boil it slowly over time, it doesn't jump out. But if you put them straight into the boiling water, it jumps straight out because it's such a change.
It's however, cruel.
Well, that's, you know,
that's how it happens.
It can build up, and you don't realize it. So, and maybe, you know, make sure that, what I'm trying to say is maybe that happens because of the environment you're put in, but however, just make sure that environment isn't created again. Moving on to, I wanted to segue into something else, back to sport, back to a different topic, but it does kind of have to do with some sort of subversive nationalistic issue. Kevin Durant came out following, I can't remember, somebody claimed that they'd rather have...
We should say who he is, by the way.
Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
NBA MVP... came out being knocked out by the San Antonio Spurs, the guys who just won the NBA Finals. His team was knocked out, and he responded to somebody on Twitter who claimed that they'd rather have the NBA Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard than up-and-coming rising Indiana Pacers star Paul George on their team, and essentially that he's a better player. Now, Kevin Durant came out with a response to that, saying something along the lines of, "Dude, or bro, are you tripping? You tripping? What are you talking about?" Essentially, I just wanted to say that there's kind of a slightly subversive national issue here with the Spurs because the Spurs have so many foreign players, and as a matter of fact, Kawhi Leonard is one of the few American players on that team. However, their style of basketball is very I don't want to say European, but it's not American. They've obviously shown us in these finals that it's the best way to play. But, you know, Kevin Durant responded with, you know, he was just a product of the Spurs system. And I just thought, to go back to it last week, because this is what I said. I said Kawhi Leonard last week shouldn't have won the finals MVP. You know, he was a product of their system. I just thought on Kevin Durant's issue, you know, the Spurs have proven that this is the right way to play, right? So the way Kevin Durant plays is very American. It's the kind of the star, not mentality, the star system, the ethos, which is if you have the best player, you win. And this obviously hasn't been shown to be true with this Spurs run. You have to have the best players and the best system to make the players good. I just thought Kevin Durant's definition of you're only good if you play the wrong way.
Mm.
If you thrive in the wrong system, that's what makes you good. If you thrive in what they've shown us is the correct system, no, you're just a product of the system. Kevin Durant came out and apologized, but you know, maybe Kevin Durant doesn't score 30 a game if he doesn't get the amount of touches in the Spurs system. You know, because they deliberately feed him the ball more, and that kind of inflates his stats. And I just thought it was strange the way he said this. And there's a little bit of national undertone to that particular thing. So,
if Pele was playing today, and this is my question, would he be as liked? Because I'll admit, I wasn't Neymar's biggest fan. I hadn't actually seen him play. I just realised I wasn't his biggest fan because the whole contract stuff at Barcelona, the whole, oh, this guy's so young, whatever. But when you actually read about him, I wish I wrote this down. He has something like 30 goals in 50 games, which is insane. That's an incredible conversion rate. You know, he has been the best player on a pretty average Brazil squad. And this is going back to LeBron as well. It's so easy to, you know, hate on the big guy or the best player. It's so easy to be jealous. And in some ways, maybe Pele and Maradona would have been just as, you know, internet hated had they been playing. Yeah.
I think today. They are in many ways in this is a product of the all access era.
Yeah.
That, you know, LeBron was the chosen one, so he'd never live up to the hype. Even though I think as somebody pointed out, he does have chosen one tattooed across his back. So maybe he bought into it himself.
Yeah.
So part of his downfall is
With the decision.
Yeah.
He obviously this is, you know, almost four years ago. I think he has matured since.
Of course.
Obviously at the time he was probably into himself.
I think though in terms of LeBron, when you look at the decision, people always forget that was for charity. People always forget that TV event was for charity. So I think in terms of him, people chose to remember or chose to look at that how they wanted to, which was in terms of hatred. Because
at the same time though, I think people are saying this guy's basically a kid. There's a lot of anger from, you know, this kind of traditional fan bases, like this is just against what it's all about. Like it's so cruel to lead on, say, Cleveland, and then suddenly go to Miami.
Yeah, but sports in so many ways isn't... We can't look at sports logically. Look at the amount of money they're getting paid.
But even today, he will forever be seen as like a mercenary.
Mercenary.
A mercenary, yeah. Because this is going to basically be like a big black mark on his career.
Yeah.
And when people look back in 50 years, let's say, probably up to best players of all time, except this will be like this kind of black mark which will kind of linger over him, which he can't really escape anymore. Which I think is a shame.
Well, I think the bigger black mark is his finals performance in 2011 and him making fun of Dirk for the flu and all that sort of stuff. I think that should be a bigger black mark than the one where he tried to make money for charity. Okay, maybe make money for charity another way, but still, I think his heart was in the right place.
People seem to give out that LeBron isn't that likable as a person. I'd say...
He is, actually.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying like his perception in the media or how he's portrayed in the media. I'd say, so what? Some of my favourite athletes are like absolute like dirtbags. I've watched back clips of Cantona. He'd have been an absolute like tool to play against. I'm sure I would have despised him if I'd be like a Liverpool fan. But I loved him. Roy Keane, one of my favourite players as a kid. Absolute like scumbag to play if like I was a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, but you know, you're a fan of one team, so...
Oh yeah, even like
so you like
the French scrum half Morgan Parra, an absolute like you can't even describe how annoying it is when you're playing against them.
You played against them, yeah?
No, as when you're watching your team play against them. So
yeah,
when you sit back though as a neutral, you can't help but like how he's being such a douche.
Yeah, but this is the thing: sport brings us, you know, it polarizes us. We like him or we don't like him, depending on our allegiances. We take a certain stance. And the stance is fixed. This is an entertainment. You're supposed to get caught up in it.
Like, I mean, Miami...
Gladiatorial combat. You're supposed to feel this way, and that's part of the sport. It is just entertainment.
The Miami Heat must be
sometimes we analyse it too much.
The Miami Heat must be one of the most hated teams in sports history, at least in the States. Just so many people.
It's part of the spectacle.
I know. I mean, so many people just, they hate, that's Miami. They hate the fans. They just hate the lifestyle.
To me, it's part of the spectacle. Get caught up in it and all that. But sometimes sitting down and analysing this too much.
Oh yeah, I'm
analyze the game itself if you want to analyze it. But I think, you know, kind of,
I think
I'm sure there were gladiators in the Coliseum that were like Dwayne Wade that everyone hated, but he kept winning and you just hated him.
He loves this. I guarantee you, he loves that people hate him.
Yeah, probably. It's part of the personality. It's just part of the spectacle. It's part of the part of the show.
He couldn't care less. He has all his money.
Yeah,
he has.
And at the end of the day, he's not that much of a villain. Just because he made a decision to get one guy to move from one place to another place, he still plays basketball, and that's all
there is. A clip on YouTube titled "Dink Dwayne Wade Villain," showing all his kind of fouls and all that stuff. And the whole, who was the elbow on? That was one of the Indiana players,
Lance Stevenson.
Yeah, Lance. Yeah,
like the flying elbow.
Yeah, like WWE esque.
Part of the sport nowadays is. Here's the hype train, the anticipation, the show afterwards, because it's part of it. We like this and we get caught up in it, and if our team wins, it's ecstasy. If they lose, it's heartbreak. So I think it's all part of the roller coaster that we choose to forget about other things. It's entertainment. At the same time, the problem is for us it's entertainment.
Mm.
But for the players, it's their job, and they're just doing their job. So they don't look at it that way; they just look at it as doing their job. So it's kind of what I'm saying is I'm not sure if it's the media, but there's a buffer between us, between the players and those who wish to be entertained, between the entertainers and the spectators. A lot of the wires cross in that divide, in the no man's land between us, and maybe that's the media's fault. Maybe they attach this wire to this wire, and then when we see it, the spectators see it in the opposite end. It comes across differently to what it actually is, but I just think that's all one big
circus.
Circus, exactly. And for the players, it's just a job. For us, we want the hype and we want all that. But then at the same time, you know, some of us want to see this. So it all depends on the individual in question.
I like basketball.
Yeah,
it's a great sport. I've never been a fan, though. In all honesty,
what do you mean by a fan?
As in, I've never said this is my team. I'm gonna follow them to death.
Yeah.
I kind of look at it more than, I guess, as a neutral. I kind of enjoy just watching two teams go at it and doing well. I know that you're a Miami fan, obviously.
Yeah.
I texted you, I think, the day the finals began, and you were convinced Miami would win.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, obviously, now you can see it might have been predictable that it was going to be, maybe not as convincingly, but that San Antonio would win. And I want to ask you, was that your fan-ness kind of blinkers on? You just couldn't see anything but, like, you know, one or two times in a row it's gonna be the three-peat.
I think it was, but I also think there was a narrative there. They win this and LeBron's won a three-peat. But there are so many bounces of a ball in a series. I mean, if LeBron hadn't got it cramps in game one, they probably would have won that game, and then they're 2-0 up. They've just taken two games from the Spurs away. You think they're gonna lose that game, that any of those games in Miami now? No chance they're gonna win it. So I think there's a bounce of a ball. In the games, however, that the Heat did lose, the other three games, they were definitely outplayed. But for what reason?
It's probably the same as the Spain-Netherlands match.
Yeah.
David Silva, a huge chance to send Spain 2-0 up. And if that happens, they're probably still in the tournament.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, we look at it at this end as the spectators, but in actual fact, you know, at the player level, well, a ball didn't go through a basket. It went through the basket more times for these guys than it went through for those guys. However, that's all that really is. But when it comes across and there's this sort of crescendo, there's this building up, it comes across, wow, look at this, they lost, devastation and all this sort of stuff.
I
do advocate getting caught up in it, but at the same time, you do have to sometimes look at it for what it really is.
So to really be a fan is to look at it. It wasn't as one-sided as it might suggest in the scoreline.
No. I'm not suggesting that, because when the Spurs won, they really, really kicked ass, because they played much better.
That, I think.
But like, what I'm saying is, it's sometimes strange to base a player's legacy so much on something. And maybe this is a problem where it's proximity, and maybe down the line, 10 years from now, some of it will be forgotten, some of it will be remembered, and we think Michael Jordan won every single game in his career, ever, that he ever played. Michael Jordan never lost a game, right? I mean, he went 82-0 every single year. You know, it's strange how history is so selective.
I think, first of all, my favourite athletes are kind of almost the conflicted characters. Just like Hamlet is such a good play because it's not about this amazing guy who does everything right. So when you look at Brian O'Driscoll, I mean, he's had big highs, obviously. At the same time, terrible lows. You know, dropped for the Lions. Never been New Zealand.
But look,
it's, at the same time, I'd say
it sort of Michael works
Jordan,
all.
Yeah, that's the thing. Michael Jordan, great player by all means, but as a teammate, like he'd be cruel. Well, he'd be mean. He'd be demeaning. And so, like that's this like this give and take.
But what I'm trying to say is, there are different reasons. There's the likable guy, who you just love. Brian Driscoll was a perfect example. He never put a foot wrong.
Well, no, people forget, like, the middle of his career, he was a bit off sometimes.
Yeah, okay, but he was, you know, everyone likes
him. Everyone loves him, yeah.
So, at least in this country, everyone loves him. It's hard not to love him, and I'm sure people elsewhere just love him.
Probably,
then
yeah.
there's the, you know, there's the team. There's the
Roy Keane kind of a guy.
Yeah, the guy, the villain that you like for your own reasons. And it's
the win at all costs.
Exactly, it depends how the guy resonates with you. With you in particular, you know, maybe he was on your team, so you had a sworn allegiance to this guy, and you know, maybe, you know, a dirty play you think isn't dirty. So, like, what, everyone getting on his back? He didn't do anything. I mean, Dwayne Wade didn't mean to kick him out sessions in the balls.
If he had social media, even a decade ago, or like 2 decades, like Michael Jordan, people look at him in a different light because people are saying, "Oh, I've heard rumors about like what he does to his teammates. Like he bullies these guys."
Yeah,
we didn't have that obviously in the, you know, 90s when he was at his height. Big conclusion would be, I think it's unfair to call it LeBron for his attitude. Mm-hmm. When I'd say he's no different than any other amazing athlete who has high standards of his teammates, and when things don't go his way, he's obviously going to be angry and disappointed because he hates losing.
Do you ever notice, we're moving on to something entirely different, I'm not sure how I can link swearing to ice cream trucks, wait, brain, cognitive processes, segue coming to the fore. In terms of project, just like in sports, how the athlete in particular projects themselves, so is the same in politics. We're going back to politics actually for this episode. This is the politics episode, and this has to do with ice cream trucks. Also, just a quick point: do you ever notice how you see something once and then it's everywhere? I know it sounds silly, but like, maybe it's because you're suddenly more aware of it, but you keep seeing it again and again.
That's a funny story about one man who, he went to some hypnotist show once, and the guy just said to him, like, 21 or some number. And since that day, he's been walking around. He keeps seeing 21 wherever he looks.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird we ascribe this permanence to things.
15!
But, so, I heard on the radio about a senator, I'm not going to name her, an Irish senator, who was campaigning, or at least was advocating, the regulation of ice cream trucks. How much ice cream they sold in a certain locality, in a certain area, in a certain municipality. Apart from the fact that I kept hearing ice cream trucks all of yesterday, I was slightly annoyed because when you think about it, the chime of an ice cream truck, it's not something that is a particular strong memory. And we've talked about how childhood and environment are such a strong influence on who you are.
I don't think ice cream trucks are a big deal, at least in Dublin.
Yeah, but I don't think so. But I've been hearing them the last 2 days with the good weather here. How strange it is that these people are allowed to broadcast the ice cream truck jingle.
Jingle, yeah.
How they're allowed to be so aggressive.
Transmit.
About their advertising. How they advertise themselves and their product. And this woman on the radio was saying that, look at this, look how strongly they advocate, or they're trying to promote selling ice cream. And she was coming across as an anti-child obesity campaigner. Now, she was essentially saying that ice cream trucks, you shouldn't be allowed to sell more than X, Y, and Z, or a certain amount to these children. And now, childhood obesity is a big deal, but I think it's a little bit more complex than how much ice cream a vendor is allowed to sell.
I think it's to do more with maybe parents.
Yeah, exactly. The ability for parents to say no. And I thought this may be the most hypocritical woman of all, because her just focusing on whipping the ice cream trucks as whipping boys for her particular campaign and saying, how are they allowed to just pick this thing and try to project themselves?
You could just say, we should close all these grocery shops because of all the stuff they sell to kids.
Yeah. But here's my problem. You know, her complaining about them, their aggressive advertising through the jingle. I mean, we just got through the MEP elections and the local elections in this country where canvassers go from door to door trying to promote certain politicians. And now she, of course, is a politician herself, but I just thought her pushing her own image as an anti-obesity campaigner when we just emerged from canvassers going door to door and her on the radio is so hypocritical when it's the childhood, the issue of childhood obesity is so complex already. And trying to simplify it just to push your own self-image was terrible. And
if you were to be cynical, yeah, that's exactly it. Self-image. She only wants her name on the radio.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but just her simplifying this issue to that extent just to come across. This isn't a political podcast, but I just thought, why would you take down ice cream trucks? And also at the same time, there was a grain of truth. In no other industry could you imagine, like, okay, maybe religion is it, but could you imagine if, because a Jehovah's Witness came to my door quite recently, and he was a nice guy, honestly. He was a nice guy.
That was very polite.
But could you imagine if he went down the street screaming, like, at the top of his lungs with a megaphone, trying to project, "Oh, come, all ye faithful," or something along those lines?
At the same time, there's kind of a traditional element. Obviously, previously, maybe people wouldn't have facilities at home to keep ice cream. And okay. So the ice cream truck obviously has some kind of a freezer. So that's where kids go to get ice cream, whereas back at home, they couldn't keep it, it's melt. Even like in the fridge, it won't be cold enough. Could that be it, why they have ice cream trucks?
Maybe. I'm not saying that's why, but I think it's an interesting novelty in our society that we have this thing that maybe, not for us, but for certain people, it's sort of rush or... Not quite a Proustian rush, but it brings back such a rush of nostalgia. I just thought it was strange that there was a strange conflict between a childish love, and at the same time, the way I saw it recently with their, as I said, aggressive promotion, how it's such an adult business thing, and
I would say that's
preying on children.
That's no different to television advertisements.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably less damaging because if you remember from your childhood, when you watch TV after school, every single ad is about some toy, some new sweet or whatever. Whereas obviously they wouldn't have like the booze ads on because different audience. So I'd say there's a greater need for maybe regulating what kind of ads are shown to kids during their kind of peak child television, whatever hours.
Apart from her being a complete hypocrite, I thought this is down to the parents, yeah?
Definitely, yeah.
And I also was hearing on the radio about homeschooling, because there's been an issue now where not being able to transition from an Irish-speaking primary school to an Irish-speaking secondary school, you know, it's unfair to the children and all this sort of stuff. And there was another guy on advocating, you know, homeschooling, because the home is by far, you know, the biggest factor in child education. He was saying that his son never went to school, never sat his leaving cert, and is now studying something phenomenal in some college abroad. So I think this is down to parents. Campaigning against ice cream trucks is unfair. We need to keep this novelty I thought it was such an interesting that looking at it from this perspective, it is ice cream truck jingle is such an aggressive way of promoting their sales. But at the same time, it's such a childish novelty that let's not always try and let these children, childish things, within reasonable limits, let the kids enjoy themselves. Let everyone who hears it that had ice cream trucks in their childhood, that this is a big factor in their childhood, let there be a sudden rush of memories as they do it. Let's not always try to look at it this way. But at the same time, their parents must be there to make sure they don't eat too much ice cream and become fat.
So
I just thought, look, in a money-driven society, these guys, if the kids are fat, they're not going to have... They shouldn't have to have a moral stance on this. They should just be looking to earn as much money as possible. Honestly, it's not their... shouldn't be their responsibility to make sure that these children don't add an extra £2 from eating an extra iceburger. You know, it should be down to the parents, and there should be a reasonable standard, as opposed to... We shouldn't need to balance... She was trying to balance... This, obviously, aggressive advertising, and there are obviously, yes, this is true, but at the same time, it's a childish jingle. Maybe it's not actually quite as aggressive as we say, but they will try and sell as much as they can because they want to, and it's their job. But why do we have to counterbalance it with the total opposite. Why can't we not just apply a reasonable medium here?
Exactly, yeah.
Where the parents just say, you've had one ice cream today, no more ice cream. I mean, not if the kids are earning this money themselves. The parents should be able to say, like, yes or no and make a decision.
I know from...
Because, sorry, I just want to say, to establish a reasonable middle in society, we need to allow this to happen. We shouldn't be trying to balance one extreme with another extreme. You must try and rid yourself of the extremes. Allow people to be extreme. Allow them to do whatever they want. So in actual fact, parents should be allowed to do it. They should be allowed to make the decision. But it shouldn't be the government's responsibility to counterbalance it with such an extreme measure. Mm. And it shouldn't be the ice cream vendor's responsibility to make sure the kid doesn't get fat. It should be down to the individual.
And realistically, out of the 12 months we have in a year...
Yeah. How many are going to be sold for ice cream? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say there's a 2-week window at most, in this country anyway, where the weather's good enough to have ice cream trucks.
Okay.
At the moment it's nice out, but that's not going to last. We live in a climate where it's sunny very unusually. So, you know, make hay while the sun shines for these ice cream lads.
Yeah.
Go out.
They should go out and try and pump as much ice cream. They should literally take an ice cream hose. You know where you have the swirl with the flake in it? They should
the 99.
Have kids, they charge kids €5 for 2 minutes for 120 seconds of their mouth, like Barney Gumble style, under the beer the tab and nose. Yeah. Under the ice cream, they can just try and throttle as much money out of them as possible. I mean, that's what they should do. They shouldn't have to look after this.
This is peak ice cream selling season.
Exactly.
This is what they prepare for all year.
Let them rake in the change.
This is like, you know, LeBron in the NBA finals.
Yeah, let them rake it in. If the parents say that,
Show me the money.
Exactly. The parents let them do it. It shouldn't be up to the government or somebody else.
Yeah.
To...
Parents, obviously, I'm not a parent. So maybe.
Are you sure?
When this changes, or if it does change.
Maybe you'll see it a different way.
Yeah, but.
It does come down to lazy parenting.
Yeah, they just seem to deflect. Everything's, no, not my fault. What's their favourite ice cream?
No idea.
I love...
It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Marge keeps buying more of those tri-coloured ice creams and everyone only eats the chocolate one. That's fine. That's fine. Do that if you want. It's up to you. You have anything else on your list before we wrap up?
Not really. I was going to talk about momentum, but that can wait.
Okay.
I think we can discuss it anyway, at least a little bit.
So you wanted to talk about momentum in sports?
Yeah.
Whether you believe it's a thing. We kind of did, because I think there are more underlying things. I mean, we search to quantify everything, and maybe some people would argue with just we don't have the facilities to quantify everything as accurately as possible. So maybe we could...
I definitely believe if in your mind you say,
yeah,
I'm going to win, then that positivity is going to help you play better.
It didn't help the heat. I was positive. Hey, look, I'm not one of those people. I'm not... Sports psychology is not for me. It's down to the individual.
In game 5,
yeah,
Kawhi nailed this tree to take the lead for the first time, and they never gave it up.
Look, as we said earlier, though, we do ascribe, we almost glorify some trees, small things too much because of how we perceive they shaped the entire game. Maybe that wasn't as big as instance as possible.
What about Ray Allen, that big tree?
But you see, the problem with that is that's fine because literally they needed a three in that. It's like when people talk about clutch. Surely the clutchest player is just the guy who shoots the best. It just literally is just the guy who shoots the best. And in that case, Real is the best 3-point shooter, so therefore he should be. You know, when we talk about the game 6-3, I mean, he is obviously he's clutch. He's the best shooter. He's going to make that half of the time.
You can look at Ireland played the Netherlands in a qualifying game for the 2002 World Cup. I just remember this because kickoff, Roy Keane immediately, huge tackle.
Yeah.
And that kind of set the tone. We're not going to be pushed around.
Yeah.
We're going to take on the Dutch. And we won that game. Went to the World Cup. Got to the second round anyway. Lost to Spain. Lost to Spain. Penalty kicks.
Yeah. I believe momentum is a thing. You know, you shouldn't need to
So,
quantify.
What about the rule of play? So, a refereeing decision goes your way.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's in your mind like, oh, this is our day.
But you see, if there is momentum, there should be anti-momentum. There should be momentum stopping.
Mm.
You should be able to stop momentum. In certain sports, there is timeouts. That's how you do it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think people need to say that there is. I remember when I play like video games or strategic games, I when you said this to me, I was interested because I play with momentum. I look to gain momentum and then either the tide flows and you just wash over somebody, or there's a guy that you know, you can't, for whatever reason, you can't beat him because he doesn't, his setup, whatever he's doing, doesn't allow for momentum to take place, or you don't have the requisite thing. So I think momentum has a lot to do with how you match up with some teams, or with some instances it's not at all because they don't allow it.
You definitely see, say, rugby.
Yeah, but no, sorry, wait, because you're not going to gain momentum against the Chicago Bulls because every play is a grind.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't say hitting three three-pointers in a row against the Bulls is momentum, because you know the next possession,
yeah,
it's not guaranteed to flow. You know,
can definitely see, sometimes you can tell, though, I guess you might say, you've lost the momentum.
Yeah.
I remember Ireland playing New Zealand this past November in rugby.
Yeah.
Lost in the last minute of the game, we lost the match. Terrible loss. I was pretty, you know, distraught for a while. Well, I say that like as a fan. The moment, at least for me, when I said it's not a day, was when Johnny Sexton missed what would usually for him be a straightforward kick, a penalty, that would have meant we were, I think, 8 points ahead with less than 10 remaining or something.
Yeah.
And just that moment when he missed this kick, you could actually see his head kind of bow. He looked crestfallen. You could actually almost feel the stadium kind of sigh collectively. And like, that must be crushing as an athlete. And that would just have, a huge, obviously, negative.
So do you think momentum wouldn't exist if supporters weren't allowed into a game?
No, because I think...
Do you think...
I don't know if...
Do you think supporters build and...
I think they contribute.
Momentum.
I think definitely your environment affects how you're playing. First of all, I think it's a mental state. I don't know if momentum exists, but I definitely think your mental strength determines sometimes how well you do. Say, sometimes, if you're like Atletico Madrid playing in Barcelona in the Nou Camp.
Yeah.
The crowd hates them. The crowd's booing them, hissing them. And sometimes you have this whole mentality like, yeah, I'm going to screw over these fans and
the
show them. Yeah. It's this whole underdog mentality. Where sometimes at home, when like, say Miami, San Antonio were playing Miami, like the crowd was insane sometimes in those matches. I know sometimes they kind of pump in the artificial sound. But this time I think it was kind of authentic.
Yeah.
And you could see, like, the players are feeding off the energy. I know it's a cliche, but you could kind of see they're so pumped up, and obviously the crowd noise fed into this whole mentality that we're going to win.
As I say, my opinion on this is there are more unquantifiable things to sports, and we seek to scientifically explain all these things, and I think that's part of sport. Mm. Part of sport is the unpredictability.
It's like statistics. You can only take so much from a stat.
Yeah, but certain stats are flawed, and then you move on to the next statistic. And
even football, if you look at football, you can say this team had all the possession, loads of shots on target, pass accuracy was high.
But like, look at it this way: if we quantify this, it's not going to become sport anymore. It's going to become science.
Yeah,
we want the occasional upset. We want, you know, this team to win this day, or there to be an upset, or, you know, because then you just go into like every season and say, well, they do this, 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 and this, so they're obviously going to win, and that happens, and it's not entertainment. There has to be some level of backing off and realizing what this is. This is entertainment.
It's theatre.
Exactly, it is theatre. That's perfect.
In fact, there's a great quote: the only difference between theatre and sports is we know that the actors are lying to us. They're not comprehending the truth.
Yeah.
Obviously, this might hint at doping in sports, which we might discuss some other time. Like, athletes, they're not really playing themselves, in a sense. They're playing a role.
Exactly.
And
so,
they're playing this way to win. It's all about, like, you can't for show the bravado, especially, like, in basketball. You see, like, the whole chest pump.
Or as we discussed, yeah.
The kind of toss of, like, what was that stuff? Flour?
Chalk. Bronze. Yeah.
Flour, what am I saying?
He's like bacon. He's like, got the rolling pin there. Right?
Yeah, it's all about theatre. It's all about a stage to perform on.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess sometimes it's a two-way kind of link where the crowd feeds off this, but so do the players feed off this.
It's all about the distractions. You know, and if we quantify the distractions too much, they become science, and science is not much of a distraction.
And even
a distraction is not being able to fully understand it and to just accept it, you know, and forget about something else. So
I've always been curious about how much, like, the fans play in contests, because obviously in my kind of playing career, I was never at the level where we had like a huge fan base.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend.
What about this podcast though?
Exactly. I was talking to a friend.
Well, so what we're desperately trying to get at here, you see, people don't even understand how clever we are in this podcast. We're saying if one person subscribes to this podcast, it will open the floodgates.
Do us a favor, guys.
It would open the floodgates and then, never mind.
But I was, one of my friends, now obviously this is school's rugby.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Premier League level.
Close to though.
I mean, yeah. It's pretty big in Dublin, school's rugby.
Yeah, inter-schools.
Playing in Donnybrook, I was asking him, what did it feel like from the stand, you know, everyone chanting and stuff? And he said, oh yeah, I didn't really notice that.
Yeah.
Like he was so caught up in the game.
Yeah, but it is though.
Because it's like all white noise.
They have run experience with cockroaches, with literally an audience of its peers, and they discovered that, this is one of my strange science, scientific experiment books, but that it increased your ability to do simple tasks well, but complex tasks, it was difficult. So it would actually make you run faster. Usain Bolt wouldn't have run as fast for his Olympic records and his world records had there not been a big crowd. And then at the same time, you know, if complex things isn't well defined, because in many ways, the reason we train is to make the, you know, to put that in our cerebellum so that it's smooth movement and we do it without thinking. And so maybe then it isn't really complex. But that's why doing something you're unsure of is much harder when somebody's watching than when they're not.
I'm reading the autobiography of a cyclist at the moment. Now, obviously, most of this book is about his doping and his drug-taking activities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's convinced the reason he was a good cyclist was because he had a high pain threshold.
Yeah.
And he says he knew he was going to feel pain.
Did he swear?
I don't, probably.
Probably right.
But like, obviously, cycling, it's kind of different to, say, football, because you have to push yourself a lot.
Yeah.
And dope, I guess. But
Critical element is the dope.
He said he just embraced the pain and kind of used the pain to spur him on, whereas maybe his competitors would kind of be afraid of pushing himself. And that's why he says he was so successful, because he knew how to push himself and like use the pain to put like spur him on to win, which I think.
And that's what, you know, maybe that's what separates more athletes than literally physical skills. How well they deal with themselves, how well they deal with innumerable external factors.
There are so many accounts you read of like talented athletes in general
who never make it.
Because like they have such good raw talent. Like look at football. I know it's sad actually how many footballers kind of fall off the wagon, as it were, and kind of get left behind, having shown so much talent at the kind of youth stage. Like David Bentley.
Yeah.
Of kind of Tottenham and who was it? Man City as well. He retired only last week, like kind of late 20s still. I'm not using him as like, I'm just kind of using him as an example. I'm not sure about his individual case. So many athletes are special, not because of the skill per se, but because of how they use or how they adapt to the stage.
Okay.
I was not the same with everyone. Like LeBron's just a freak and like Usain Bolt is a freak. Yeah. But lots of times.
Yeah.
Pirlo, have you watched him play football? He looks so passe. Mm-hmm. He's so kind of, oh, whatever.
But that's just how he deals
with it. And like that's his way.
It's cool though.
I'm pretty sure, like he's my favorite footballer now. I think just because he's so cool, he doesn't even jog. It's slower than a jog what he does. He kind of strolls around, amazing passes, and that's it. That he gives you the same thing week in week out. Just watching is just kind of special.
Okay, thank you for listening to episode 6 of YDK podcast. If you liked us, which I hope you did, and if you got this far, which probably means that you did like us. I don't know, why else would you listen to the entire podcast if you didn't like us?
Masochist.
Maybe you were fascinated by how stupid we sounded. Or you were masochistic. Please subscribe to us on iTunes.
Increasing the pain threshold.
leave us, exactly. But they're trying to listen to us bad podcast, more and more bad podcasts. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review in iTunes, that really helps. Anything else, send us any emails, thoughts, comments. Send us that at ydkpodcast@gmail.com.
What do you think of the ice cream debate?
Yes, tell us what you thought. Please do all that. Thank you very much for listening again. We'll be back soon with another episode. Delightful episode. Episode 7.
Probably a full compliment.
See you then.
We were good enough though, weren't we?
I think we were.
Yeah.
Let them tell us. Did you think we were good enough? I don't know.
The dream team.
Laurel and Hardy. Thanks for listening.